The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
My name's Signe Wilkinson. I'm the editorial cartoonist for the Philadelphia Daily News. And I'm a total devotee of Sylvia. Yeah. I bet there are one or two others in the room. Before we get started, you know what to do. Turn them off now. Yeah. Aw, that's right. No bill collectors. No fundraisers. Well, this evening's guest, Nicole Hollander, says that she created her cartoon character, Sylvia, to say what she couldn't. But we all know that that's not entirely accurate. She created Sylvia to say what we all couldn't say. Sylvia is like a secret thought bubble. She expresses what we really think while we're mouthing something polite. When we hear a guy say, "Can you imagine a world without men?" our inner Sylvia replies, "No crime and lots of happy fat women." When someone opines that men don't talk, our inner Sylvia reminds us that the day men begin talking about their feelings, quote, "Women all over America will be sorry within minutes." So tonight we get to meet the mind behind the character. Nicole Hollander was born in 1939, graduated from the University of Illinois, holds an MFA from Boston University, and for a while used her immense talent to design matchboxes in California. And I'm going to leave that to you to find out how that happened. She first published her Sylvia cartoon in 1976 in the feminist magazine The Spokeswoman in Chicago. At that time, the top editorial cartoonist was the incomparable Jeff McNelly, who's brilliant draftsmanship was copied by most of the rest of the editorial cartoonists in America. Fortunately, Nicole was not one of those cartoonists. Instead, she created a simple graphic style and a couple of unforgettable characters, including a television set, that we will remember and endure. Most editorial cartoonists fade from memory the moment after they're published, and I know this for a fact. But as her new collection, The Sylvia Chronicles, 30 Years of Graphic Misbehavior from Reagan to Obama, amply shows, Sylvia cartoons endure, and so does her creator, Nicole Hollander. It is my high honor and extreme privilege to introduce her to you tonight, Nicole Hollander. By five each.
Yes, I am shorter than Sylvia. Since I've written this book, which is called The Sylvia Chronicles, 30 Years of Graphic Misbehavior from Reagan to Obama, I started to think about those 30 years and about the journey I took from being an artist. You know, when I turn my head this way, it's completely useless. I sort of think about how I started out and what I was going to be and how part of my journey was always there. I was always thinking about how could I bring together all these different parts of what I wanted in my life. One of them was to be an artist, and to be a bleak artist, to be a German expressionist. I wanted so badly to be that. And the other was to be a social activist. That was part of me too, and part of my family. And my, and then the third part was to be a stand-up comic. You know, so how could I work my life so that I would manage to do these things? So how did I get here? Well, first of all, I was the kid in school who was always asked to draw the turkey at Thanksgiving. This caused me to greatly overestimate my talents as a draftsman. I kept one notebook from my childhood, and I could see the horrible drawings that I did. I was so sentimental. I had these women, you know, with, I don't know if you girls, long swan-like necks, and handsome men. I drew Harry Belafonte quite often. And when I looked at it and I saw how sentimental it was and how bad the drawing was, I didn't care. I was still going to go to the University of Illinois and be a painter. My family, I grew up at the time when the whole idea was you would go to school and you would meet a nice professional man. I would meet a man who was a much better provider than my father was. That was the aim. And so, in fact, if I had wanted to major in skeet shooting, my parents would have not said a thing about it. So here I am. This is a model that I drew, so I was drawing realistically. And then how did I get to this dame, to this 40s dame, you know, with a cigarette hanging out of her mouth? Okay. This worked, you know, an hour ago. I'm going to aim it here. It's unbelievable. This is technology. The old turn it off, turn it on. Mm-hmm. Take it.
Reboot the pointer.
Talk about the matchbooks.
There's one. There it went.
Okay. It's just frozen, I guess.
And we have to go back.
Yeah. You want to stay there?
Yeah. I went to Boston University to get my master's degree, and that's where I started painting, and that's where the German Expressionists came out. I cared nothing about realism. I still don't care a lot about realism. But I cared a lot about social problems. My father was a member of the union. He was a carpenter. And when I became a social worker for the Cook County Department of Public Aid, we had a union. And it didn't occur to me to join it. And he said to me, well, do you think that it's perfectly all right that other people should fight your battles? And then you should reap the rewards. So I put my head down and I immediately joined the union. My mother, and this is the other part of it, that, you know, I got so tired of standing in front of a canvas and, you know, kind of examining the bleakness of my life. You know, after all, I was 20 and my life was full of torment. My mother worked for a small local hospital, and she was the director of admitting. She was a very gregarious woman and very, very funny. And if someone was in trouble in the hospital, you know, they were pregnant, they had a terrible love affair, someone abandoned them after they got sick, she brought them home. So that was sort of the double strain in my life of you have to do something for other people. And standing in front of a canvas is maybe not exactly, doesn't fill the bill. Then when I graduated, I started to work as a graphic designer, and that's when there was some money to do materials for students. This was about a program about friendly fire killing a young man. And the teachers would have these materials that I would design. I was a graphic designer. And they would discuss the program. Then I had this other side, which I think of it as my Bambi side. You know, I just wanted to do these sweet, colorful drawings. And this is a still from a film on water reclamation. And then I was a specialist in big noses. And Sylvia is the outcome of this. I worked for a company called Argus Communications, and they did posters, and that was one of the great jobs of my lifetime. The other great job of my lifetime was working for an insurance company, and I would do a one-page folded flyer, and it would have a die cut in it. And in that die cut would be a metal watch. I don't know, for a metal calendar for a man's watch. And this was to entice independent insurance agents to sell our insurance. But I could do absolutely anything I wanted on that as long as I got that die cut in the right place. This was also, you know, I did have a lot of favorite jobs in which I was not able to earn a living from. And it continues to this day. I did this illustration for Mother Jones Magazine, and it was about Fatal Attraction. And poor Glenn Close, all right, so she got upset a little bit. I'll be the single working woman bitch, and you be the mommy. And she says, I never get to be the single woman, I'm telling. Good girl. When a guy dumps me, I buy a big bag of semi-sweet chocolate. Then I get into bed and cry and eat until I hate myself. Bad girl. So like if a guy dumps me, usually I like to run over and pour acid on his car and kill all his pets. My parents had a little deli called the Pine House Delicatessen, and I was very attracted to everything about it. To the people who came in, I danced at the jukebox. I cleared people's plates, and I loved the paraphernalia that went around and a small diner. These images appear in Ruby. I have a character called Ruby the Waitress, and she works for a cafe which is partly a cafe and partly an HMO. So she bullies people into eating very healthy food, and then they also have to have a medical procedure. This is the original of Sylvia. My mother had two girlfriends, Esther and Olga, and they knew each other since they were teenagers. They all got a job selling subscriptions door to door, and then they all married guys from the same social club. And they had their kids together. And that's me sitting in the back of Esther, being just absolutely charmed to be in her presence. And what her look was, this kind of world-weary, kind of very sexy woman, a reader. She was always reading, and she always had a long cigarette in her fingers. My mother smoked when she was pregnant with my sister, and she would put her ashtray on her stomach so that I could see it bouncing up and down. And my sister is taller than I am. So unfair. I was looking through slides when I was putting the show together, and I came across this character, and I must have been thinking of Sylvia forever. This is really very, very old. And I was just drawing this little figure in a bathrobe with her hair in pin curls, visited by aliens, of course, because I always have to have aliens in my strip. Now, here is this is before Sylvia was Sylvia. This is a Sylvia who is not yet a feminist. And I think this has to do with the fact that she has this very tiny nose. And when Sylvia got this really big nose, she got the big attitude to go with it. So here's this woman, and she's watching this guy, and he says, "Truly feminine women don't like affirmative action programs. They don't like short men, rare meat. Truly feminine women like spike heels, chocolate miniatures, and they eschew plaids and beer in cans." And she's holding a beer in cans, and she says, "That turkey has gone too far." So that's the beginning of her awakening to feminism, beer in cans. And this is the full-blown Sylvia. "Rita, you must believe me. Alien beings are among us." She says, "Yeah, in public office." Let me catch up to myself. I think the reason that Sylvia was in my life for so long was that there were never any babysitters when my mother and her girlfriends were having kids. And so they just took us everywhere. And so we would sit at the table while they overindulged themselves in, you know, hot beef sandwiches and french fries and cigarettes and whole milk. And, of course, there was no cappuccino, so it wasn't perfect, but it was very close to perfect. And we would sit there, and we would mimic them. And we created a woman called Iris. And we just talked about her all the time. And I think that tone was what created Sylvia. Whenever I had a new collection of cartoons that came out, I would have a Sylvia look-alike contest. And I think the woman in the white jacket with a cigarette hanging out of her mouth is utterly perfect. She did not devote her life to dressing like Sylvia, which is a great disappointment to me. Then, one day, I get a letter from a woman who says, "You know, I've been making Sylvia dolls. I've decided I'm going to sell them, so I thought maybe I should let you know about it. You know, I just love this." There was no idea of copyright or anything like that. So I said, "Well, are you ever coming to Chicago?" She said, "Next week." So she came to my house, and we sat all day long and talked about what Sylvia would wear. And if you would notice, she is wearing a black lace teddy under her play suit. Oh, here, I have to read this out of the book. Ah, here it is. This is a letter from a woman that I got in 1982. "Miss Hollander, I have some very unusual reasons to be interested in your column on July 23rd, 1982, which was about the concerned Venusians for the planet Earth. I would appreciate greatly if you would explain to me why you thought of all those details and chose the Venusians in particular as the space aliens. If you would like to know what my reasons are for being interested, I will write you back and explain. I was too afraid to answer her letter." I have no idea what she was going to tell me. I was talking to Signe earlier about this, that it used to be when people wrote letters and they would write letters to the editor, someone at the newspaper would take all these letters and put them in an envelope and send them to you. And sometimes they were very good, and sometimes they were really scary. And sometimes I would get them, and I would think, "Oh, my God, do they know my address?" And, of course, they didn't, because it was just the envelope. I stopped answering letters when I got a letter from a man who said, I hate your cartoon. So I thought, well, I'm a reasonable woman. I wrote him and I said, look, it's small. You just skip it and you go to the next cartoon. And he writes me back and he says, looking at your cartoon is like looking at a leper. You can't take your eyes away from the running sores. And I thought, okay, I'll never answer another letter. And if you've written to me, this is why. Now, this is the kind of letter that I want. Why did you take Sylvia out of your comic selection? Are you demented or what? My mother and father. Now, they look like movie stars, I think. And yet they were, you know, very concerned with the world around them. He had to quit high school, but he was very, very proud of being very self-taught. And he knew, as my sister said, he knew anything you might ask him. My mother was the social one and the funny one, but he was the one who knew words. It was a pleasure to listen to him. So I'm sitting in the living room, and he's doing the crossword puzzle, and he says to my mother, I bet you don't know what a male swan is called. She says, sure I do. A swine. And there's no way I could have been anything else but a cartoonist with my mother. And one who cared about politics with my father. Okay, this is the start of the political cartoons, and when I put this together, this book, I thought, you're laughing at it. I'm glad that you're laughing at it, because I looked at it and I thought, these are so dumb. You know, it's like I hated Reagan. I thought he was stupid. You know, I mean, the thing is, I don't know where Nicaragua is. I don't know where Ohio is, to tell you the truth. I'm standing in Philadelphia, but I'm not sure where I am. But I felt that our president should know more than I did. And then I also wanted to say that everything that I put into the strip is real. I get it out of the newspaper or I read it online. So when Sylvia's listening to the TV and it says, in case of nuclear war, the government has at its disposal 39,508 pounds of powdered morphine sulfate, etc. And she says, what have they got to get us through the 1984 elections? I did not make that up. I think about Robert Steele. The Republicans can always find one black person who will be a Republican, but that is really all they can find. And this was 85. Tomorrow, Joni makes a surprising announcement on Happy Days. She's gay. I never worried about what I wrote, because I think I had the feeling that no one was reading it. And that I had this terrific job where I could just write anything I wanted, except for the letters from the man who thought my strip was like looking at a leper. But, you know, he was the exception. And then this was interesting, because Reagan did not speak about AIDS until after he left the White House. And there was, in 1980, there was a real upsurge in attacks on gays, really serious attacks that necessitated hospitalization. So anyway, Gurnoff is the Venusian. And he sits down at the bar. He's like de Tocqueville. He wants to see what America's all about. He's talking whatever language he's talking. Sylvia looks at him. She understands what he's saying perfectly. He's no stranger to her than any other man who sits down at the bar. So she says, uh-huh, women wear slacks, and no one comments on it. What would happen if you wore a dress? Well, some people would invite you to parties, and some people would attempt to beat you to death. And I think this was a really raw kind of cartoon, which I don't even do anymore. I mean, this is the wonderful thing about looking at these things, is that I don't remember how I thought that it was, you know, sort of okay to just do this in a family newspaper. Now, when I write about homosexuality in the cartoons, no one writes me back. If I should mention something like hemorrhoids, I am in real trouble. This is an example. Alabama's ban against vibrators stands. State says there is no constitutional right to an orgasm. And Sylvia says, Rita, get my copy of the Bill of Rights. And she says, I think that's in the Declaration of Independence. I think that a lot of cartoonists are really excited by the idea that they might get away with something in the family paper. And so I felt really good. I got orgasm and vibrator in the same cartoon. Oh, and cats. I wanted to say before, you people are really fast readers. I try to make up for the fact that there isn't a lot of movement in my strip by having a lot of different characters. And, of course, the cats are one of them. Now, cats were never allowed on planes before. They had to fly as baggage. I recently took the late lamented Sally Cookie with me to California, and I had to pay $100 for her each way. And she sat with me, you know, under the seat in front. And my thought is, no one can eat peanuts on an airplane, but I can take my cat on the plane. So it seems like there's a revenue stream that's very attractive about cats and not about peanuts. I got in trouble for this one. Culture alone doesn't make us who we are. The brain is differently wired in men and women. In men, the wires are loose. Okay, I'm sorry. I forgot myself. So this guy writes, and of course someone else wanted, was happy he wrote, and they published it in the paper, and he said, two wrongs don't make a right. And I thought, oh, yes, they do. The Supreme Court staggered the nation today when they ruled that conception begins the minute you think about sex. Now you can see how old this cartoon is, because it's an old answering machine, not digital. They used to write, does anyone remember these really long ads? They were all words, and it was all about how they were just working day and night to make life better for us. And we were not grateful. True. So I wrote this, and a guy calls me up, and I think, oh, my God, he's a lawyer. And my life is over. He's going to sue me, and I don't have any money anyway. So he said, how many papers are you in? I said, six. You know, it's like. So he wanted me to print an apology for what I had said, how I'd insulted. And I said, why don't you just do a joke about me, you know, see if you can get it printed. And then I said to him, what do you do over there at Mobile Isle? And he said, I'm a PR person. And I thought, oh, just too bad. And I just hung up on him. But I waited a long time before I did another attack. This is, I find this really interesting because this used to get, see, some people are still laughing. When I showed this cartoon to a conference of health workers, there was no laughing because doctors were already being killed. So it was no longer funny. When I did the cartoon, it was really about doctors being the center of everything in the world, that only what was important to them was important, and later it became something very tragic. I have a section in the book that's called Good Ideas. I have all these good ideas, and no one does them immediately as I think they should. The Senate Subcommittee on the Problems of the Poor announced a plan today to have rich people and poor people switch places for a specific amount of time to be decided next week. The poor will always be with us, but there's no need for them to be the same people over and over, said a committee spokesman. Cats who gloat. Fluffy and I will not be paying for the SNL bailout. We didn't vote for Reagan either. Okay. It's very long. You have to be patient. Here's the original cartoon. Mom, can a douche make you feel more confident? And she says, not like a good stock portfolio. Of course, that stopped being accurate some time ago, but this was in 84. So Laura, who signs herself an RN and mother, says, it seems to me that more care and editing should be done in the comic section of the journal. The strip by Nicole Hollander is offensive and quite unnecessary. It certainly is not humorous. That's always the coup de grace. If I was only humorous, I could say any damn thing I wanted. I know you know what I was trying to say. Why isn't she angry because the TVs are running ads which tell her daughter that there's something terribly wrong with her unless she buys this commercial product to make her smell good? Anyway, my editor said that they also received calls from people who were concerned about this kind of advertising being done on television, personal hygiene. And I wrote to him and I said, could you have made this cartoon any bigger? I mean, it's like you offended a lot of people and then you made it bigger. And he said, that's my job. And I just think they don't make him like him anymore. It was really wonderful. Ma, how long are you going to stay in the tub? Sylvia's daughter used to actually appear. Now, later in the strip, she's a voice from offside trying to bring some balance into Sylvia's life. But here she's always wanting to take a shower. She always wants to, you know, she's going on a date, you know, and Sylvia will just say anything in the world to her to keep her away because Sylvia wants to stay in the bathroom, you know, like forever. So, like, she'll say to her, you know, Rita, honey, I once had an affair with Matt Damon's father, so you really can't go out with him because he might be your half-brother. And then she says, and you can't go out with Ben Affleck or Casey either, you know. But here it's Afghanistan again. And what happens is that when I look at this enormous span of time, it's the same thing over and over and over again. We make the same mistakes. The Soviets pull out. There's a vacuum. We go in. When Bill Clinton came in, I was so excited. I thought, my God, someone I voted for actually won. I changed Sylvia's hairstyle. I changed her face. She looks fabulous. Dear Bill, okay, let's talk about health care. I want everybody covered. I don't want people losing their coverage because they've been careless enough to have a catastrophic illness or be unemployed. And while we're at it, get the insurance companies out of the picture, retrain those guys, or send them to live in the south of France. Let them all have breakfast together, café au lait, and croissants on me. Love, Sylvia. Dear Bill, there are a few things I'd really like to see happen over the next 4 years. First, I want Thomas, Scalia, and Rehnquist pensioned off. Send them someplace nice. See how kind I am. They're always going to the Mediterranean. Maybe near Gore Vidal's villa. Okay, then I want some judges appointed who believe in justice for all. Okay, I'm not unreasonable. They don't all have to be women. I got my wish finally. I love cranky women. Here's a woman. I will try to be more understanding of others. I will try to be more patient with dealing with the incompetent people that surround me. Scratch, scratch, scratch. Finally, she settles on, I will not slap anyone first thing in the morning. And I love this woman. This woman does not have a name. She's just easily irritated. And she's angry about all the women who have benefited from feminism and yet find that feminism ruined their lives. They only have the strength left to write a book. This is a little pile of books by women who built careers on whining about how feminism gave them too many options, causing them to be confused rather than happy all the time. Please hand me a match. That's her dear husband. Would my honey like to think this over? No? Very well. Today, as part of the government's Healthy Forest Initiative, President Bush flew over many of the nation's forests, causing them to disappear. Ma, saying something like that is going to be illegal any minute. Oh, and here's Ruby at the HMO Cafe, a fun cafe. Ruby, what's the special? A turkey club and a sigmoid oscopy. Just kidding. She says, oh, thank God. She says, yeah, we're out of turkey. I was just thinking when I looked at this that they don't give sigmoid oscopies any longer. They're not thorough enough. You have to have a colonoscopy, just in case you were wondering about that. Chiquita Banana is being sued for supporting right-wing death squads in Colombia. Now, remember, I don't make this stuff up. If this is true, it's like finding out that Bambi's mother ran guns or that Lisa Simpson smokes. And her husband says, keep calm, honey, it may be a rumor. Does Lisa smoke? This is actually one of my favorite ones. Oh, this character was created because I wanted to complain about my mother and I didn't want her to know. So I made her a young, lovely black woman so she wouldn't know it was me. And my mother was the kind of person who would call me and she'd say, it is bitterly cold out today. I hope you're not leaving the house. And I'd say, well, I need a quart of milk. She said, okay, go ahead. But you know that in weather like this, the water in your eyeball freezes. Hi, Mom. You and your bridge club are volunteering to search for weapons of mass destruction? I'm so proud of you, Mom. Are you going to Iraq? No. Iran? Korea? No. Paris? Well, I agree it's more fun to look for WMDs. There. Bring me back some shoes. This is how I felt. I dreamt that everyone I knew cashed out their stocks before the market crashed. I called my sister. I said, why didn't you tell me? And she said, didn't you get the memo? No, I shouted. Well, it's probably on your dresser under a pile of dirty laundry. And it was. Resolutions of cats. In 1989, I resolved to develop a longer attention. I wanted to tell you that I used to go to a palm reader, which is so much better than going to a therapist because palm readers don't want you to do any work. They just tell you stuff. And Justin looked at my hand and he leaned forward. He said, God, you've got a lot of kids, he said. And I said, no, nary one child do I have. And he said, what do you do for a living? And I said, I'm a cartoonist. And he said, they're all your characters. that's all your children. So I thought that was a wonderful way that relieved me from not having any children. I was watching fairly recently a program on Louisa May Alcott. And she was so incredibly popular. She was such an icon that she was hired to come in front of an audience like you, and all she was asked to do was turn 360 degrees. And that's all I'm asking for.
Do you want this out? Do you want to refer to it? Or?
No, I don't think I need it.
Okay. All right, I think all of you know how this works, so if you raise your hand and we'll get you a microphone. Who'd like to start us off? Maybe about six rows back in the white, right in the middle there.
So if you thought Reagan was stupid, what'd you think of George Bush?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I got a little bit more sophisticated in my attacks on George Bush. I think Reagan was just, you know, like a dumb. Why is he there? And Bush did so many specific things that I could write about that I shouldn't say I enjoyed it, but there was more meat to work with, really. And then, of course, there was Rumsfeld and Cheney and, you know, and Karl Rove and all, you know, and then the people who, you know, suddenly did something so hideous and they had to be removed from the government, and it was because they wanted to spend more time with their families. So there were often the same kinds of lies over, you know, over and over again. Thank you. No. You don't have any questions? Thank you.
Third row.
I have two questions. First is your cartoon strip running in newspapers all over the place or somewhere? Or
less and less.
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah.
What's your take on the Obama administration? What has your sequence of take been, let's call it that, from?
From incredibly overjoyed and optimistic and insanely happy to, okay, this country can't be fixed in a day, you know. So I'm, you know, I still give him more slack. I still think that he, I mean, we got health care reform. We got women on the Supreme Court. Maybe we'll get something with, well, immigration, but maybe not. You know, but I just feel that he was a great improvement, and I still feel cautiously optimistic about him. Yeah. Can I talk about newspapers for a little while? I was saying at dinner tonight that I'm in fewer and fewer papers because papers are dying. And anyway, my brand of writing is not real popular. I'm in some online papers. And if you want to see me, you can actually see my cartoon every day by going to uClick. You go to uClick and you just put in Sylvia, and you will get that day's comic. And so there are a number of online. Thank you very much. I'm going to start writing a blog. Someone reminded me that the last time I wrote in my blog was in 2008. But I promise to do better, you know. So yes,
and the cat.
Yes, I do have an EduCat site called educat.com. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Back on the aisle.
You're warming up now. Good.
What would we have to do to get your cartoon in the Inquirer?
In the Inquirer?
Philadelphia Inquirer.
Oh, God, I think of violence. I don't know. It's, you know, they're probably in bad shape, too, you know. So thank you for thinking of it. Yes.
Well, this is actually partly directed at Signe, too. Your cartoon used to be in the Philadelphia Daily News, which probably far too people in this room read. But maybe if a lot of people in this room wrote to the Daily News and told them, they'd read it. Maybe it would come back.
Signe's still in the Daily News.
Signe's still in the Daily News. But Sylvia used to be.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. Many years ago. And that's how we got to know you, your work.
Oh, really?
And we were heartbroken when you were dropped from the Daily News.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes.
What's the difference between the editorial cartoons that are on the editorial page and yours that are in a comic strip? Like, I mean, do you ever make that transition or anything like that?
I think I was talking to Signe about this, and I can play a lot more than she can. I mean, I can be funnier. She is tied to politics. And often that is not the greatest fun. And she's trying to tell about what's really happening. And I can also play with culture. So I have an enormous range to deal with. And I think political cartoonists are much more hamstrung by the strictures of the demands of their job. So I'm having a better time than she is.
No, I'm not. I'm listening.
Few more questions? Yes, right here in the third row. If you could just wait for the mic so everybody can hear.
Can you talk very briefly?
Can handle this. Can you talk briefly about your interest in cats and your determination to give them a place in your strip? Did you have cats as a child?
You know, I never had cats as a child. I got my first cat when I was 40 on my birthday, and then I got another cat. I think my family just didn't want any animals. One day, my father came home and brought me a white mouse. Now, that was not my idea of a pet. And it was not my mother's idea for sure of a pet. But what cats are wonderful for is expressing our pure selfishness. You know, that is what they are. It's all me, me. There's just two questions, you know. Where is my dinner and hurry it up? That's it for them. And I'm very sad because I just lost a very wonderful cat, Sally Cookie. So sweet, she had to have two names. It'll take me a little while to find another one because she really was something special. So, I like cats a lot. Yes?
I do wait about 5 rows.
Hi. I'm a longtime fan. Riding in on the train this afternoon, I was reading your Sylvia on
Sunday. Oh, my goodness.
Which is from 1983.
An heirloom.
Right. But in one of the things you talk about, your particularly good lunch in 1942, which was the year of my birth, and you talk about you and Mitzi. Do you remember this?
No.
And you quit school in the first grade together? And you.
Oh, yes, running. Yes, right.
Was that your friend or your sister?
That was made up completely. I mean, I was never that adventurous child that the two girls who go off and Sylvia as a child is encouraging her friend to be delinquent.
Yes.
You know, and...
Yes.
I wish. Okay. I wish that was me.
And then the other one was The Lives of the Lesser-Known Saints. Do you remember that?
Yes, I think I do. I've always been interested.
The patron saint of television series, Saint Stella. Anyway, how do you come up with this? Oh, and also, will you autograph my Sundays?
Certainly. I will be happy to. I will be thrilled to. You know, I watch too much television. I eat too much chocolate. I, you know, hang around with cats and funny people. Yes.
It's
Get the mic to the fellow.
It's true. It's true. I think that taking a bath relaxes you and silences those voices that tell you you can't do it, whatever it is that you want to do, and then you're calm. And often I come out of the tub and I have an idea immediately. So I advise it for everyone who's been taking showers all these years and wondering why their life isn't better, you know? Thank you very, very much. A pleasure. Okay.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.